Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. We are told elections have consequences. However, it would seem this does not apply to foreign policy. You can vote for America First and peace, but the neocons in the end always win. Crosstalking the neocons, I'm joined by my guest, Garland Nixon, in Washington. He is a political analyst and radio host. In Montreal, we have Arnold August. He is an author and journalist. And in Rio, we cross to Nico House. He is a political analyst, founder of Hotspot Media, and the host of For the People podcast. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Arnold, let me go to you first in Montreal. I'm titling this program, Neocons Always Win. As we were convening, we just found out that Dick Cheney, the former vice president, died at the age of 84. It's quite interesting because I will ask all three of you, is Donald Trump a descendant of Dick Cheney as his presidency stands right now? Go ahead, Arnold.
Yes, I would say he is. I mean, at the same time, in response to your question, there is a sort of a struggle between the deep state and those who want to follow the Trump policy. Allow me to give you the example of Venezuela. There is obviously a tension between Rubio, representing the deep state, in my view, and Richard Grenell, who was Donald Trump's special envoy to Latin America, specifically Venezuela. Now, he went to Caracas, invited by President Maduro, in January 2025. They shook hands there. We saw that very nice optic. They even had what we can call a friendly conversation. Of course, Grenell went back to the United States with American prisoners, which was held in Venezuela, which was the objective. But nevertheless, you have this optic, which probably did not go down well with a deep state. And in fact, not too long after that, Rubio, in my view, representing the deep state, convinced Trump to go on, well, Trump was, of course, quite willing, to go on this rampage against those boats in the Caribbean, supposedly fighting against narco traffic. However, right after that, what happened? On October 17th, the commander of American CELFCOM, admiral, he actually resigned. Of course, he didn't say why, but everyone knows there was tension going on between the deep state and those who would rather follow the Grenell policy of diplomacy, supposedly, with Venezuela. At the same time, not long after that, like while this, the boats were, the all these attacks were taking place, on October 31st, Caracas convened a meeting of the legislative bodies representatives to Caracas to meet there in support of Venezuela against U.S. policies. Almost all of the countries were there. It was really quite inspiring. Cuba was there, of course.
Yeah, well, but of course, self-determination of Venezuela was slightly short-circuited by the Nobel Peace Prize Committee. Garland, I mean, it's remarkable that Dick Cheney recently has died as we're doing this right now. And I asked my first question, is Trump a descendant of Dick Cheney? And I think most of us would agree with that. But Garland, what does that say about the strength of the presidency? Is Donald Trump a strong president? Go ahead, Garland.
I don't think it's possible to have a strong president in the United States. And I would argue that Trump is not a descendant of Dick Cheney, and here's why. Because what we're viewing oftentimes when in what appears as a disjointed American foreign policy is factional fighting. And sadly, the factional fighting is often, well, we want to attack Iran. No, it's Venezuela. No, we want to attack China. Oftentimes, it's an argument over which war they want not next, as opposed to whether they want war at all. I do think that Trump is a little different in that he seems hesitant to pull the trigger on a new war. I will say, I've been predicting it for a while. I don't really think Donald Trump will attack Venezuela. He may. But he's known to step right up to the line and get his toes.
Yeah, but Garland, he did attack Iran. Okay, he did pull the trigger. Yeah?
No.
He did attack
Iran. I'll put it like this.
Iran. I said Iran. He bombed Iran.
He didn't. No, that's what I say. It was a dance. If you and I dance, that's not a fight. There's a difference between a dance. Championship wrestling is not real wrestling. If I call Iran and say, hey, I'll drop a bomb, don't turn on your air defense system, and in return, you can throw some missiles at us as long, and we'll get people out of the way, I don't consider that a legitimate attack.
Okay, but Garland, that's if you believe their story, okay? We've seen the trickery and the deceit, even in this administration here. Yes. Nico, everything we've talked about here, these are wars of choice. Now, none of us here know exactly what Trump's going to do with Venezuela, but he's certainly prepared to pull the trigger here. But that's a choice. There's no national security danger to the United States or anybody else. Go ahead, Nico.
Yeah, there's no national security danger. There's no massive narco trafficking scandal that at least could be resolved by attacking Venezuela. And it would indeed be a choice. And I would say that, yeah, in a lot of ways, ironically, Dick Cheney's somebody who Trump actually lamented for being a neocon. Trump has shown that at bare minimum, he's willing to follow the policies and this game plan of neoconservatism and foreign policy that Dick Cheney has laid out. Because we're not just seeing it happen in Venezuela. We're seeing it happen right now actively in Nigeria. They're talking about Christians being massacred by the thousands in Nigeria as if problems between Christians and Muslims in Nigeria have not persisted for decades, literally decades, and also as if there haven't been more Muslims slaughtered by Boko Haram, which is funded by the United States, than Christians. No one has said anything about that, and yet we're supposed to believe that Trump is acting altruistically in the case of Nigeria, altruistically in the case of Venezuela, altruistically and defensively in the case of Iran. This is the Dick Cheney playbook. Make up a lie, create a demagogue, create a villain, and then use them to attack. I would agree with Garland in a sense that he's right. There are the liberals and the neocons and Dick Cheney and Trump and Obama. They just create really different excuses to wage the same wars and engage in the same conflicts. It's just different strategies. But at the end of the day,
I agree with you. But, you know, Arnold, let me go back to you in Montreal. Maybe there is a different layer to this neocon agenda. Is that Trump is just desperately seeking wins because he thinks that Venezuela will be a win, okay? And that's why he's so frustrated with the Ukraine project, because he can't find a win. And so that is his angle to all of this, which is quite pathetic because it's still a choice and the consequences can be very grave for someone that wants like a sugar rush. Go ahead, Arnold.
Yes, I agree with you. He is looking for a win, and Venezuela is a good example. Even it may seem ironic because of all the gunboat diplomacy going on, gunboat aggressions being carried out. But on November 3rd, press conference in Air Force One, I believe, one of the reporters asked Trump straight out, are you going to strike in Venezuela with troops and or other military options? Yes or no? He said no. And then, of course, the journalists and analysts discuss it. Does that mean he's not going to strike now or he's not going to strike ever at all? So it's up in the air.
But didn't he say he was considering it later? After that, didn't he say that he was considering it? Yeah.
But he also said in a 60 Minutes interview that Maduro's days are numbered. I mean, what do you want? What hour of the day, what day of the week do you want to believe this guy? Let me go to Garland. Garland, jump in.
Yeah, certainly. And here's a lot of us learned a long time ago. You got to ignore what Donald Trump says, because in the morning he's going to attack every country in the world, and by noon he's changed his mind, and by 4 o'clock he's going to attack them again. Then he has a deal with Putin. Then he doesn't have a deal with Putin. So the reality is that Donald Trump's rhetorical foreign policy is far different than his kinetic foreign policy. We never really know what he's going to do. But as I said, he's wary. I would be surprised. He may attack Venezuela, but I think it would be a dramatic mistake and could potentially, effectively end his presidency.
We can't win a war against Venezuela.
Yeah, but gentlemen, again, because we're dealing with Donald Trump, we have to look at eventually there's going to be a Trump dictionary. Okay, so when he says attack, Nico, I mean, decapitation, regime change. I mean, it's potpourri when it comes to this guy. Nico.
Yeah, attack could be just put a bunch of ships around their borders and in their water and threaten them for 3-4 years. Who knows? It could mean legitimate attacks. We've seen in the U.S. case, when it comes to Venezuela, it could mean boots on the ground in secret or explicitly. But at the end of the day, we can't survive a war against Venezuela. And I do believe that the only reason we haven't engaged in a full-fledged or full-scale war with Venezuela or put groups on the ground, commence an operation, like a legitimate operation with boots on the ground, is because there is the constant question rumbling around in Trump's mind. If we wage this war in Venezuela, will I get a win? And the truth of the matter is, anyone who served in the military, anyone who's currently serving in the military knows we don't have the capabilities to beat Venezuela. And we are actually completely and totally unsure how much capabilities they have to defend themselves, because we know Russia and China and Iran have been involved in helping equip them. So I don't believe that Trump is going to get engaged in a war in Venezuela, but he will keep talking about it.
Yeah, but Arnold, before we go to the break here, one thing, you know, when we look at the DNA of this neocon agenda that's been around for decades now, particularly since 9/11, generating chaos is an option B that they seem to be perfectly willing to accept. Chaos, exporting chaos.
Yes, of course, that's what they want to do. At the same time, the reality on the ground in Venezuela is something else. I've been there seven times. I interviewed and spoke with members of the militia. Since the gun attacks against the boats, the number of the militia, that is, enlistment, went up from 4.5 million to 8 million. That is in addition to the armed forces. And speaking to the militia members and having other contact, I am convinced that Venezuela can resist any U.S. aggression. I remember very clearly, if I may mention, in February 2019, when I was in Caracas, had a very small, intimate meeting with President Maduro at the time when the United States was using Juan Guaido, him, as an instrument to try to overthrow Maduro.
Arnold, I have to go to a hard break here. We have to remember that was Trump's fiasco in 2019 that didn't work out. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the neocons. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. To remind you, we're discussing the neocons. All right, let me go back to Garland in Washington. There's been a real flame war online against Tucker Carlson due to his position on Israel-Palestine and criticisms of what we're talking about today, of the neocon agenda. Garland, can the MAGA movement survive this? Because the more you try to take down Tucker Carlson, the more you pump him up, okay? Candace Owen, people like this, Glenn Greenwald, these are people you don't mess with them, because they're very serious people, unlike the paid influencers that are very unserious people. All of us would like $7,000 per post, but I wouldn't take that money. I would never in my life take it and say what they want me to say. No. Candace Owen, Tucker Carlson, these are free agents, okay? Can MAGA survive that?
Yeah, but let's keep in mind, MAGA is basically a more recent iteration of the Tea Party. You know, the Tea Party came around after like 2008, 2009, and they were angry over economic issues, in particular the bailout. So MAGA was, I would argue, commandeered. The Tea Party was commandeered by President Trump and turned into MAGA. So I think it has the potential to change. I've got issues ideologically with MAGA, certainly, but I think they do have some potential to push back against the neocons. And as we've seen in instances, to even push back against President Trump. I mean, there are people that argue that MAGA is just some kind of a cult of personality, but I don't think so. I think it has a life of its own. And I think with people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, Candace Owens, and Tucker Carlson, we're seeing that life of its own that has the potential to push back against the neocons and some of the other more traditional powers of foreign policy in the U.S.
Nico, the same question to you, because Trump is going to have to choose, okay? And his poll numbers are quite awful at this point here. But I want to reiterate, I mean, in 2016, less so in 2020 because of the COVID situation. But in 2024, he was still against wars of choice. And you see it online because of what Elon's done to X. I mean, you get a lot of these flame wars of people just completely worshiping Trump and other people saying, is this what you voted for? And I think a lot more people are saying, no, I didn't vote for this. Maybe the Venezuela will be the litmus test, at least the next one. Go ahead, Nico.
Yeah, Venezuela has been a litmus test. The situation in Israel has been a litmus test. And I don't believe that in its current form, MAGA can survive if they continue to go at each other's necks and come after people like Candace Owens, like Tucker Carlson, and the like. Because one consistent theme that we have seen between people like Candace Owens and Tucker is that these are the few that have been able to actually lead the cult of personality a part of the MAGA movement and openly criticize Donald Trump and become more famous and more successful because of it. Because yep. Let's be honest, yep. a large portion of the
look, all three of you are agreeing exactly on that point. Keep going, Nico. Yep.
Yeah, a large part of the MAGA movement is the MAGA economy. No one has been fooled by that, except for, you know, there's very few that have been fooled, rather. But Candace and Tucker took a leap of faith, and even to some extent, Marjorie Taylor Greene with her political clout, and decided to openly criticize Trump on things that maybe you or I would think warrant basic criticism, but for them would be a very big deal 3 or 4 years ago. And now that people are realizing, hold on, my bank account doesn't have to be negatively impacted for criticizing Donald Trump. Oh, in fact, I can make more money and become more successful, be considered more independent-minded for criticizing Trump. A MAGA movement that is based in the cult of personality cannot survive that, especially when they're seeing the results pan out the way they have for people like Tucker and Candace.
You know, Arnold, one of the most, I think it was during the 2020 election, and Trump went down to South Carolina, and he was on the stage with Lindsey Graham. A lot of people call him Lady Graham. We'll leave that aside. But he was booed in his own state, and now Trump is campaigning for him. So again, I ask the question, is it a legitimate question to ask, is Trump a descendant of Dick Cheney? Arnold.
Yes, I think he is to a large extent, and it's possible that despite his wishes, he is losing the MAGA base. We're talking about voting and MAGA movement being larger than one person. Now, a recent poll in the United States showed that only a small minority of American voters support the current U.S. aggressive policy against Venezuela. So that pretty much coincides with how people voted for him a few years ago. So I think that he has to take this into account. Will he go with the deep state or be faithful to what, you know, what we call the MAGA movement, supposedly not in favor of war and presenting himself as a peace candidate? That's why I still think it is possible in Venezuela, given the situation, that he might even backtrack and say at one point, well, we no need to invade. We defeated the drugs. Everything is all over. I'm still your peace candidate. It's quite possible.
That's very.
Can I say really quick that I do believe that in Trump's mind that this potentially is not a war of choice, because of the horrible decisions the United States has made internationally that is causing legitimate negative economic blowback that he is not having to deal with. So this situation with the oil, for example, which we all know that's what it's really about, or in Nigeria is about putting boots on the ground to stave off the AES. It's not even really about Nigeria, right? And because we see what the results of what's happening in France. I think that in Trump's mind, there are legitimate arguments that can be made by the deep state that this isn't a war of choice, and that's what's leading him to create the lies that justify the aggression.
Nico, what will be important is if he can convince his base of that argument here, and I think that remains to be seen.
Yeah.
You know, Garland, yeah. You know, when looking at how people's perceptions have changed, and you've been on this program many, many times, is that, If I would have said to you 3 years ago, a majority of voting Americans would be on the side of the Palestinians and not Israel, you would have thought I was, you know, crazy. But that has changed. And I think, again, that's why I'm discussing the hold that the neocon agenda has over power, because I never would have thought that the American people would start turning on the Zionist agenda in the Middle East, but they are. And I think that is something that's leading other issues that people are saying, hey, we need to question this here. This is a remarkable moment that we're living in right now. Garland.
Yeah, I think we have a confluence of issues. I think we see with the Gaza moment, we see the U.S. has been able to, for years, kind of bamboozle people to believe that they were acting in an altruistic manner. We're going to save this country from its evil dictator. We're going to save this country from its evil, I don't know, oil or whatever. And the American people would believe, yes, America's operating for the good. But they were able to see through social media, be it Telegram or whatever, that there were terrible things happening in Gaza and that the United States government was supporting it. And their eyes were open. At the same time, America is the average working class person is feeling significant economic pain. And in addition, they're seeing all of this money's going to Ukraine, all of this money's going to Israel, all of this money's being spent on military planning and military operations as their material economic life deteriorates. So I think these issues all brought together has created a frustration amongst Americans that's manifesting itself politically, and I think will manifest itself in the upcoming midterm election significantly.
I feel like it's similar to the pandemic effect, right? We saw so many Americans get educated because they didn't have a choice during the pandemic. They had a bunch of free time, and they were experiencing economic hardship. And now that we're in this new phase of economic hardship, they're seeing their money being sent out to the rest of the world, claiming it's for altruistic reasons, and not seeing any results that are supposedly being desired of being achieved. And so it's like, okay, well, it'd be one thing if you were being an imperialist and we were benefiting from it, but we're no longer even benefiting from the imperialism the United States participating anymore in anymore. So what is the point of all this?
Well, all the more so, we're talking about the legacy of Dick Cheney on this program and Wars of Choice, but there's another part of this that's very important. I'll go to Arnold on this, is the limitation on civil liberties. Dick Cheney was a leader of that, okay, with the Patriot Act. And we've just seen our civil liberties, freedom of speech being crushed, and particularly when we look at the Palestine issue here. The Trump administration doesn't have a good record on this at all.
On the contrary, it has a very bad record on that. I mean, you know, we're talking about war against Venezuela and other parts of the world, but there's actually a war being waged by the Trump administration against the people in the United States, occupying cities, ICE forces, taking violent action against immigrants, etc. And I think under the leadership of Biden and now Trump, it is not possible in the United States to take a stand against Israel. It's easier now. You know, Israel has been, as the other speakers have pointed out, has been completely, their narrative has been defeated. But still, it is a sin to speak out in support of the Palestinian people against Israel. So in that sense, yes, he is a descendant of Cheney, and the deep state cannot let loose of Israel. Middle East is important for the United States of America, whoever the president is.
Well, I wouldn't say it's important to the United States of America. It's very, very important to particular donors that have enormous amounts of money, influence, and an agenda. Strategically, the Middle East is turning into a backwater as we see the globe change. And this insistence in staying there and against the will of the American people. No one is ever going to be allowed in America to vote on this. Garland, finish it up for us.
Yeah, well, what is important to, and it gets back to our beginning discussion, the Middle East and a lot of these other military adventures are important to the empire. for the U.S. to be an empire, for the U.S. to have hegemonic desires to control everything else. It's important for the mentality that we control everything and the domination, but the everyday person is not seeing any benefit from it, and they're seeing pain from it. And there was a time when Americans got cheap things because their government went out and stole everything that wasn't nailed down in the world. Well, now that money is going out to try to maintain that system, and it's expensive, and it's not working anymore, and Americans are feeling the pain.
Absolutely right. I mean, it's looting the empire now. Instead of building it, looting it now. Fascinating discussion, gentlemen. I wish we had more time, but we don't. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Montreal, and in Rio. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.